It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He takes it off the middle, and he's wrapped up from behind. Max Crosby.
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years.
Open at the 35, racing to the 20, 10, touchdown Raiders.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Hour number two of the show. JT back with you here as we continue on. We'll take a look at Monday Night Football tonight. It'll be Kansas City and the Buccaneers. Kansas City is a 7-point favorite. Wow, the favorites winning in the NFL straight up against the spread. That's a big storyline that's happening here also. And Sam Munson will join us here quickly from the 33rd team. And then my conversation with Rich Gannon today, along with Eric Allen. Fresh content alert as that comes up. And I'd rather hear from Rich Gannon than me on why the offensive coordinator was fired by the Raiders. And that would be Luke Getsy. And with Luke Getsy being fired, we'll see what happens going forward. It looks like they're in the market for a quarterback. We knew that already. What's going to happen with that offensive coordinator position? And I'll continue to interview Antonio Pierce every week. I was with Tom Telesco today, the GM. I'll tell you about our conversation coming up. Always a privilege to talk to Sam Munson, the NFL analyst. What a great job he does with Steve Palazzolo. Check out their great podcast. I download it every week, and I think you'll love it from the 33rd team. They do a great job. Sam, let's begin with Dennis Allen being fired first. I think we both agree those first two games, they look like world beaters, and they look great going 2-0, and then they lose every game since then. It was just a matter of time, huh?
Yeah, it was. It was the kind of run that does get people fired. And, you know, I have a certain degree of sympathy for them in that they got really banged up. They got incredibly injured. The offensive line ran out of bodies. The receiving corps ran out of bodies. Derek Carr got hurt for a few weeks with his oblique injury. The defense fell apart. So it wasn't the team from the first couple of weeks. But the problem is it didn't turn around once they started to get a lot of those pieces back, you know, and they did patch it back together in several areas, and it still looked the same. Like, whatever had happened to them during that run of being banged up and being incredibly injured looks like it's been a terminal problem. And now Derek Carr coming back in didn't fix it, and they got outplayed by Carolina, who's been the worst team in the NFL, or certainly one of them this season.
Well, a lot of what you just said sounded like Luke Getsy when you mentioned Carolina, too. The Raiders lose, and the Raiders clean house with three offensive coaches there. The wild part, Sam, is the last month, their opening drives, they've scored, and they've had the lead against some pretty good teams, and then everything digresses and falls apart there. Antonio Pierce made the change after the Cincinnati game. How do you see that one?
Yeah, and, you know, as you say, the games tend to start pretty well for them, but it's... some very questionable play calling. You know, you look at this team and they've had one of the worst run games in the NFL, if not the worst, all season long, and they call plays like they're unaware of that fact. You know, they get down in the tight red zone and just try and plow ahead for yardage. And it worked a little bit against Cincinnati because their defensive line, their run defense has been weak enough that they could get it working. But, I mean, that just sort of raises questions about what are we seeing here from this team and what are we doing to try and put guys in the best position to succeed. It is a bare bones type of offense. You know, they've traded away Devontae Adams. They didn't have a particularly talented backfield. The offensive line is missing players. But even so, we're not kind of helping out what is available by trying to scheme these guys into the best position to have success and to make plays.
Rams were 1-4. They're 4-4. What are you seeing? Obviously, getting healthy, Cooper Kupp back. But what are they doing at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball that led to the surge?
Yeah, I mean, their offensive line has been pretty impressive this season for the most part. When they're healthy, they've been able to hold up pretty well. It was a wild game against Seattle. Those quarterbacks combined for 9 big-time throws, but 4 or 5 turnover-worthy plays between them. There was just a sort of wild variance in what they were doing with the ball. But really, one of the stories of the Rams has been those young players that they drafted on the defensive line have been fantastic. Braden Fisk, a defensive tackle, Jared Verse on the edge, those Florida State teammates, they've been incredible this season. Verse in particular, I think, would be the defensive rookie of the year if it was called tomorrow. He's been a really impactful player. And Braden Fisk's been pretty good inside him as well. So replacing or sort of helping to replace the void left by Aaron Donald, which is obviously an incredible gap, an incredible shoes to be filling. You're not going to do it with one player, but they've taken a pretty good shot of doing it in the aggregate with multiple bodies and those two rookies being two of them.
Sam Munson's our guest from the 33rd team. Really disappointed in Joe Flacco and Jameis Winston's performances as the fan bases wanted to embrace them both and see if they can win multiple games and keep the team on the right path. And, you know, Richardson, we know why he was benched there. And, you know, Jameis seemed like he was really connecting with the Cleveland fans and going to embrace this opportunity. And both quarterbacks, in my opinion, played very poorly and didn't give their teams a chance to win.
Yeah, they didn't have good games. Flacco, I think you can at least put the caveat out there of it was against the Vikings defense. And, okay, the last couple of weeks, the Vikings defense hasn't looked great. But before that, they were destroying everybody that they came up against. They made Brock Purdy look bad. They made C.J. Stroud look bad. They were absolutely making every single quarterback they faced look like they didn't belong. So I think you could see them bounce back a little bit last night, and that's a big part of why Flacco did not look great. The Jameis game, though, I think is more an indication of just he's always been this incredibly high variance roller coaster type of quarterback. You know, he threw for 30 touchdowns, 5,000 yards in a season, and was benched the year after that. They didn't want any part of him because the variance, the roller coaster, the dips are just too extreme, and teams wanted away from that. So he had a pretty good game. He obviously stepped in and replaced Deshaun Watson, sparked them to life, and really gave them belief. But this week was an indication of you can't rely on that every single week with Jameis. It's going to swing up and down.
Sam, what do you think of the Cardinals trading for Broncos pass rusher Baron Browning? What does it say about both teams heading into the trade deadline?
Yeah, well, the Cardinals definitely need an influx of talent on that defensive line. You know, Dennis Gardeck was their main source of pass rush. He got hurt with an ACL injury. They just don't have the horses up front, and they've been making really impressive strides despite that sort of no-name defense making some plays. I think it's a good roll of the dice for them to bring in somebody like Browning, who has not a great season but has previous tape showing that he can be an impactful pass rusher and a playmaker on that defensive front. And from Denver's point of view, Browning had kind of fallen down the depth chart. He just wasn't part of their team. So I think it makes sense for both sides. You know, Denver was willing to kind of move on from Baron Browning. They basically relegated him from the lineup, and Arizona is desperate enough for those types of players that they want to bring him in. So I don't think it necessarily indicates, you know, Denver's done with the season and they're in sale mode. I think they were just willing to move a guy that they weren't going to use as much.
Sam Munson's our guest. I'm really interested in your opinion on Bryce Young, because not so much the analytics and the numbers. We know how he's played poorly, but Baker Mayfield went to Cleveland. And Cleveland as a franchise, they've proven that they've been wrong a lot more than they've been right. And under David Tepper, Carolina's been a disaster. So they helped fail him at that position, and some of the blame goes to Bryce also. We know he's undersized, but Sam, to trade for him now, say you can get for a fourth or a third and park a number one pick from 2 years ago and develop them with the right veteran and the right coaching staff, do you think someone's going to take a chance rolling the dice and giving him a shot in another city?
Yeah, particularly coming off that game. Okay, it was against the Saints, and we just talked about how they've fallen apart, but that was the best Bryce Young has looked since college. And like you said, this was a number one overall pick in a year where, you know, C.J. Stroud was in that draft. There were other available high-end players, and Bryce Young was seen by a lot of people, if not most, as the best prospect available. So I wouldn't want to have to start him right away. But if you're Miami, say, you know, and you want a contingency plan for Tua, given his concussion history, or if you're the Rams and you want a succession plan for Matthew Stafford, given his age and his injury history, there's a couple of teams out there with the sort of environment and potential development pathway that I think could be really intriguing for Bryce Young if the price has slipped low enough. I think there's definitely a couple of teams that would be interested in making that move.
And Sam, wrapping it up, I know you tweeted the Saquon Barkley backwards hurdle, which is truly amazing. The fascinating thing is the Eagle fans are still killing Sirianni. I mean, when they win, and there's a big topic for them to discuss, which is the running back making a physical play that we've never seen before, Eagle fans will do that for a moment. They're like English soccer hooligans, and then they'll go right back to the coach. Even when this coach wins games, he gets a lot of heat for down and distance, the clock, what's happening there. Is he ever going to get some breathing room with this fan base? Because they're winning now.
They are. I think the problem is that game was almost a repeat in small sample size of last season. You know, it felt like the collapse from last year all happening within an individual game. And I think every Eagles fan that was there through last season just got immediate Pavlovian flashbacks to what happened a year ago. And I think that's why he's still taking the heat. You know, he took a lot of the blame for last season. I think the ownership was pretty close to moving on from him in the offseason. They were convinced not to. They were convinced he's the guy to put it back together again. But that game gave everybody the same feeling as last season. And the fact that they dodged that bullet late in the game, it obviously sort of averted the crisis. But I think it got a little too close to everybody to reminding them exactly how last season went.
Sam, last one. At this exact time last year, there were 5 2-win teams. Now they're 9. 2-7 teams. That's a big number. And when you break down analytics with your team and you look at this, that is so many teams completely checked out. So they're out, all of those teams. But the unique part is that puts some teams that have 3 wins like the Jets or maybe 4 or 5 wins like the Broncos and the Chargers really involved in a wild card here because so many 2-7 teams are out of it and they're all on everybody else's schedule the rest of the year.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of these teams with 2 wins who have viable quarterback situations all of a sudden that might be an awful lot better. I mean, we saw the Cleveland Browns are tied for the worst record in the NFL, and they just beat the Ravens last week. And the Ravens look like the best team in football in any given week. You know, Jameis may be liable to lay an egg in any given week, but he's also just as likely to go off and have a huge game, and that makes the Browns scary. You know, Miami Dolphins with Tua back in the lineup are a completely different team. I know they're 0-2 with him back in the lineup, but they've been close. And one of those teams was against Buffalo. It needed a 61-yard field goal to get it done. Like you said, the Jets got a win beating Houston. They, I think, are close to being able to beat any team in the NFL. They might not put it together over a season, but they become dangerous. So I think a lot of these teams that have had really bad starts to the season are extremely live threats to, you know, teams having much better seasons and with winning records and who are jockeying for seeding position. And, yeah, we're going to see some sort of kingmakers from these teams down the stretch.
One of the best NFL podcasts out there, period. Check the mic. You can find it at the 33rd team. Thank you, Sam. We'll talk to you next Monday. Appreciate you.
Anytime. Take it easy.
You got it. Sam Munson from the 33rd team. Really good. Deep dive on this. And, you know, someone told me on my text who listens to the show, doesn't call in. Most 99% of the people who listen don't call in. They told me that early in our careers, Bobby. We were at Sports Fan. 99% of the people can't call in. Why treat everybody like they're welcome to call in? And I know some fans are like, you're tough on the callers. You don't let them finish. Give me a break. Take more calls than anybody in the history of this format. You want to call in on any topic, you can call in on it. Just make sure you're respectful, and I think a lot of people are being respectful today on Luke Getsy getting fired. They understood that he wasn't good enough. He was going to get fired. Antonio Pierce had to do something. They waited too long probably to do it, and they made the move. So that's where we're at today. But my buddy said to me, man, how do you do shows like this today? These are the easy ones. When there's bad news and chaos, it makes radio much easier. The hard ones are June and July when there's nothing to talk about, like nothing. And I sit around and I go, what are we going to do today, baby? Bobby, top 10 receivers of all time? Let's do it. And that's where we're at today. Today's very easy to do this because it's very controversial. A coach got fired and lost his livelihood. 3 of them today. Key cards out of the building. Escorted out. I don't know how they left. But that was interesting. Last night, very quick story. I do my Sunday night show, and yesterday we were on the air at 8 a.m. Pre-game started at 8 a.m. So got up and I went to the Golden Tiki the night before. Oh, I got to tell this story, Bobby, very quickly. So we had an early start on Sunday. And it's daylight savings. So we're going to get that extra hour. So my best friend's mom was in town, and she went to Adele, and she was going to the Eagles with my best friend's sister. It was a ladies' trip out here. So we took him out to dinner at Emmett Smith's restaurant on the Strip, where my buddy runs. It's fantastic. The menu, best bolognese I've ever had, ever. the bolognese there, better than the bolognese that I've had in Italy. Is that good? So we're done taking him to dinner, and Mrs. Baxter is 82 years old, one of my mom's best friends. And we got to get him from the Strip, right there at Emmett's, which is in the Fashion Show Mall, right on the Strip. Got to get him to the Sphere. So I've had a couple of beverages. My wife's driving. We tried to go, Bobby, a block and a half. A block and a half on Las Vegas Boulevard, left at Palazzo. The Sphere is right there. But you're not going to ask an 82-year-old woman to walk, and the show starts. I finally saw the chaos of F1. The track built, the turn on the Strip, going down to a single lane. They weren't nervous. We had enough time for them to make the Eagles. Eagles start at 8:30. It's about 8 o'clock. By the time we make that left and crawl, I get out of the car and hold her hand, and I walk her right to the Sphere. It's about 200 yards, not too far. And my wife didn't move in the traffic, so I walked back, got in the car with my wife, and then we took off. We went to the Golden Tiki, pretty unique bar if you've never been there in town.
I happen to like the Golden Tiki, actually.
Yeah, the Golden Tiki, I've been there much, but it is trippy in a complimentary way. Trippy in a good way. So we went there, went home, and got home around, I don't know, 10:30. And I moved my clock ahead. I have the original clock radio that I had when I was 14 and my iPhone set up because I get very nervous. You can't oversleep when you're hosting the Raiders pregame.
Especially when you're
show.
On the air at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, we're
in the
on
morning.
The air at 8 o'clock. So it was up at 6:30, a little coffee, drove there, 8 o'clock in the morning. We do the pregame show, Desmond Ritter. Come on. Desmond Ritter, Brock Bowers. We're me and EA, East Keys. We're fired up. So then I leave deep Henderson. I go home and watch the game with my son and family. I don't have to sit in the building. And then I leave in the third quarter. I go back there. Longer story short.
Too late.
I get there. I get done with the postgame show. I come home. I do my night show last night from 8 to 11 p.m.
Ooh. Yes.
And there comes the alert. Tom Pelissero, Luke Getsy's fired.
Yep.
And I'm sitting there, and I throw out the text back to the Raiders. This and that. I get confirmation. I'm sitting there going, okay. About 9:30 Pacific time, 12:30 Eastern, Luke Getsy gets fired. So the day started off in their building at 7 a.m. Almost 10 o'clock at night, I'm getting the Luke Getsy news. It's a long day.
Oh, yeah, it's a long day.
Of Raider therapy. And that doesn't include the game they played where they decided, hold on, not to touch the tight end. Because I said, you got to touch the tight end. I said that to Kelsey. You got to touch Kelsey, and they didn't do it with Kelsey. And then they didn't do it with this Cincinnati tight end. And the tight end's running around like a doe in the forest, and no one's touching him. They're not even guarding him. He's scoring touchdowns. I'm going, what's going on here? That's my day.
You know the one thing I noticed about that Raider game, not like I was paying a whole lot of attention, but did you notice like in the first five plays that there was a long bomb all the way down to the 40-yard line?
They threw a bomb.
Gosh, where did I hear that about last
week? You heard it here
on
this show. All you heard on this show for 2 weeks is put your hands on the tight end. Put your hands on the tight end. Put your hands, please, on the tight end. We don't do that anymore. We did for a period of time very well. We did. We started putting our hands on the tight end. You think Miami's tight end is not licking his chops now, looking at the film in the last 2 weeks? Tyler in Vegas on 920. Hello, Tyler. Tyler is gone, and that gives me an opportunity to take a breath. Good. So when we come back, we'll get into Rich Gannon and what he thought today. Rich is hanging in there, man. Rich is coming on with us every Monday, and Rich brings his A game, and you won't believe what he had to say about the disappointments of what's going on with this team. And the decision to move on from Luke Getsy. Good time for you to get in if you'd like to call. 702-365-9200. With the Raiders' schedule in front of them, if they were 4-5 or 5-4, which was possible, they had a lead in a lot of these games, we'd have something different to talk about. Now we got to talk about the bye week and coming out of the bye week with a bit of a fight.
So, it's a three quarters of a foot away from the goal line. Minshew's under center. Moves Bowers in motion left to right. Snap, handoff, White through the middle. This time he's not touched. That's a no-doubter. Touchdown, Raiders.
That was nice. That was Zamir White scoring on the opening drive. That looked pretty cool. They came out. They were ready to play. As Steph McKenzie just said, we're brought to you by the DeCastaverde Law Group. The brothers win. The brothers have your back. Just check out their Google reviews. Watch their videos at brotherswin.com. The brothers have your back. They're in Tivoli Village, also downtown. They do everything that the other law firms do. Hundreds of millions of dollars in recoveries for wins here. But they're a family-based law group based on the legacy of their dad. And they grow because the community trusts. So you can trust them and what they're able to do, the DiCastroVerde Law Group. Proud partners of our show. We got a lot of them here. And I want to get them all in because they're a big part of why I can get away for a few days during bye week here. Mark in Michigan is on the Raiders mobile app. Mark, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
JT, thank you for picking up the call. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity. I guess where the perspective I'm looking at is I like to be more solution-based.
Mm-hmm.
We are where we are, and what I'm hoping, and I'm going to use living in Michigan for the last 20 years, using the Lions as a bit of an example. Year one, their offense was abysmal. Anthony Lynn was the offensive coordinator. They ended up firing him. And what I'm hoping that the Raiders do, you know, Pierce and Telesco, and is start to plan and scout the league, collegiate and NFL, and start to build an elite offensive coaching staff. Because I personally don't feel that we have a staff now that has proven that it can develop offensive talent real well. And I think if we upgrade in our coaching and really build an elite staff, then I think we'll have the ability to finally start moving forward towards a competitive offense that can lead us in 2, 3, 4 years to be a playoff and potentially Super Bowl team. But I think we're devoid of that talent on the offensive staff right now. That's my opinion.
Yeah, the offensive staff is getting a lot of heat, rightfully so. I don't think they were very good at what they did, and that's why three coaches were not retained. You know, when the Raiders moved to Vegas, and they've been here now for 5 seasons, they're supposed to be in the Super Bowl by now. Let me make that point clear. The vision was to build the team coming out of Oakland, coming to Vegas with some good players and build it and make it bigger, better, recruit younger, newer players, draft well, and go out and build the Super Bowl team. And I cannot believe we're not there yet. I'm very disappointed in that. Now, you could say, hey, JT, with the team, and you're going to say whatever's right. No, I'm always genuine. I want the team to win, so I'll never apologize for that. But now it's a pause, a major step back before another positive step has to come forward. And we'll see how that plays out. We've got a lot of time to talk about new coaches and what's going to happen here. Antonio Pierce is the head coach. He made a strong play today on why he made the decision. I'll get to that sound coming up here in a little bit. Every Monday, first thing I do is I sit down with Rich Gannon on Raiders Roundtable with Eric Allen. Here's what Rich had to say.
Rich, we got the news late last night. Luke Getsy was relieved of his duties as offensive coordinator along with two other coaches. Your initial reaction?
Well, JT, you could kind of get the sense this was coming. You know, when you listen to Antonio Pierce's post-game press conference, which I do every week, I think at times they're telling. I think the frustration was increasing each and every week. I think the failures that the offense has had, in particular their inability to take care of the football, the 19 giveaways, you just simply cannot win that way. But I also think it was situationally. I mean, you look at third down, you look at red zone struggles, you look at short yardage and goal line. You know, the lack of improvement as a unit, the struggles they've had in running the football. I think even the struggles with the quarterback position, it just was just too much to overlook, and they decided to make a change.
Yeah, Rich, when you're in that quarterback room and you're devising schemes Monday, Tuesday, and you're sitting down with your coach, what kind of input does the player have in those situations when an offense is struggling?
There's a lot of input. Well, that's a great question, EA, because I think it depends who the coordinator is. I've worked with some coordinators early in my career where I had a lot of ideas and suggestions that simply weren't heard. Or, you know, a guy was very stubborn and very stuck in his ways. This is our system. This is how we're going to do it. This is how I'm going to call the game. Compare that to when I was with John Gruden, who was very open to comments and suggestions and feedback. Hey, I don't like this. I don't feel good about this. Hey, we didn't rep this well in practice this week. Maybe we shouldn't do this. Hey, these are the throws I like in 3rd and 2 to 4. Hey, these are the shots I like down in the red zone. So that's important to be able to get that feedback from the coach, from the player to the coach. Some are better than others. I don't particularly know what Luke Getsy's style was, but look, for whatever reason, it hasn't worked out. Here's my concern moving forward. I don't care who you bring in to call plays. I know Scott Turner's going to do it. He's got a little bit of experience having done it with the Washington Commanders. But it doesn't matter who's calling plays if you don't have the personnel to execute the game plan. And I just don't think when you look at the Raiders, the struggles they're having, the injuries they're having along the offensive line, their inability to run the football because of some of the issues there. And also when you look at the rest of the group, I mean, the quarterback position, I think, has held them back, continues to hold them back. I don't care who's calling plays. If you just think you're going to be able to flip the script with Scott Turner and all of a sudden here the next 7 or 8 weeks, they're going to start being a top 10 offense, I just don't see it.
Yeah, Rich, that's a really good point. Look at yesterday. They're decimated on the offensive line. Plus, they're playing rookies. Those are the two guys that are healthy along the way. Devontae was traded. Michael Mayer hasn't been available. Jacoby's been hurt. They can't get a deep ball ever downfield. So everything that could go wrong, you mentioned no running game, had gone wrong for Luke Getsy and this offensive staff. There wasn't a lot to work with here, but I want to get into the fact that there wasn't a lot of vision. I don't think there was a lot of aggressive play, especially the overwhelming stats going into halftime. They're opening up and they're scoring. So the team is ready to play. They're charting these 15 plays and they're working the last four games. Well, what do you see with the inability to go into halftime with any type of momentum and then come out in the third quarter? They usually go 3 and out.
Yeah, that's a problem, right? We talk about the importance of situational football. We seem to have this conversation every week on the show. And the Raiders have not been good in situational football. The two-minute offense, the ability to shift gears, the ability to change the momentum, to get the momentum back in a game, the ability to sustain that success. They just haven't been able to do it. I just think there's not a lot of continuity. I think when you talk about the issues that they're having, I mean, think about it from a defensive perspective. If you're playing the Raiders, you know they have problems along the offensive line. They've had some injuries. They can't run the football. The quarterback position doesn't really concern you all that much. And you look at the perimeter, and they don't have Devontae Adams. Jacoby Myers has missed some games. Their best player is the tight end. So you're not really having to defend the entire field. The field shrinks as a defense, and it makes it even more difficult for the Raiders to pick up chunk plays, to pick up first downs, to be successful down in the red zone. They've not been a good physical football team in any regard. When I watch them offensively, they don't pound you in the running game. They're not physical in pass protection. It's just that's the issue right now, and it makes it, I don't care who's calling plays. If you can't get that addressed, it's hard to move forward.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think the identity of this football team is still no one really knows offensively. And I think that's the real issue here that we're dealing with is there's just nothing to kind of lay your hat. There's no level of football that you're saying to yourself, no matter what, we can do this well. Mm-hmm. And is that a cause? Is that the reason because of the quarterback situation? And you have three quarterbacks right now that you're kind of playing with. They all kind of have different skill sets. How do you, as a coach, have a offensive game plan, system, identity when you have three quarterbacks who do different things?
It's a challenge, right, EA? And I think when you don't have the continuity and consistency at the most important position on your football team, it's hard to be competitive, right? It's hard to win. The Raiders have had this issue for a while now. You know, when you're going from quarterback to quarterback, you're going from a rookie quarterback to a guy that's played, a guy that was hurt, a guy that comes back in, a guy that gets hurt. It's just that continuity is so important at that position. But here's my message for today, and I think this is the most important message as I look from afar at what's going on. We can focus on the play caller. We can focus on the head coach. We can focus on the quarterback. We can focus on all the issues that they're having. I mean, defensively, look what they've done during this losing streak. They're getting up over 31 points a game. Mm-hmm. So to me, we can keep looking at ways, quick fixes. You know, we get a new quarterback. Hey, we get the first pick in the draft next year. Hey, at the end of the day, it's bigger than that. You have to look at systematically what is going on inside this organization. Why aren't we winning? Why do we keep changing coaches? Why do we keep firing coaches? Why do we keep replacing coordinators? Why do we keep searching for quarterbacks? It's bigger than that. I think you have to look at the culture and the environment, what's going on inside the building to figure out a way to get this thing cleaned up and fixed once and for all.
Rich, we saw Desmond Ridder. He got a touchdown to Brock Bowers. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
If you want to play more, you better find Brock Bowers. Yeah, and I were talking about that. And that's something to build on because of his mobility outside the pocket. as Eric was talking to me before you came on, the defense knows he's passing on every play when he comes in, so they got their ears pinned back. I thought he had good composure. He's got the playbook. There's going to be a new playbook with Scott Turner, so I think he should be playing, and I don't know when Aiden's going to come back from the thumb, but we saw a lot of Gardner, and I think it's time for Desmond Ridder to show us what he could do. I thought he ended the game on a positive note.
Yeah, I think you have to start looking down the road. I think you have to look at, you know, that position and say, look, we know what we have in Gardner Minshew. The turnovers are just too much to overcome. We got to find out about some of these younger quarterbacks on our roster. And certainly you look at Desmond Ridder. He's a talented kid. I've studied him coming out of college at Cincinnati. He didn't have great success in Atlanta, but I think he's a kid that has some upside and some potential. And then at some point you get Aiden O'Connell back and you have to look under that hood again as well. So, you know, look, my message to everyone in that locker room is every day you walk in the building the rest of the way, you're being evaluated. Everyone is being evaluated. How hard you work, how hard you prepare, what you look like on the practice field. We're going to study those practice tapes. We're going to see who's mailed it in. We're going to see who continues to work and takes pride in putting that silver and black on each and every week. That's what I'm looking for. I want to see this team fight, compete, battle the rest of the way. I'm getting hit up on my phone from these Raider fans who drive me crazy. They've had enough. And look, they deserve better.
Yeah.
The product on the field has to improve. You know what it starts with? A commitment to excellence.
There you go. Last one for me, really, Rich, is have you ever been in this situation where the team is struggling and, you know, guys are, like you're saying, you know, guys are starting to meld in and taking those opportunities to get away from the game for a while? Have you ever been in a situation like this, and how do you resolve it?
I have, unfortunately. Yeah, if you play long enough, I've been on some teams. I was on a team in Minnesota that went through that. I went through a situation like that with the Washington Redskins in 93. It's hard, right? It really challenges you to stay focused, stay committed, stay dedicated to your craft, and also realize that you're a professional. This is what we get paid to do. And you have to come in. You have to have some joy in your heart that we're getting to do what you love to do. And I'm seeing some really bad football. You know, you look at the Raiders have lost 5 straight. The Saints have lost 7 straight. They fired their coach, Dennis Allen. And, you know, you've got to fight through it. And it takes strong people in that locker room. You know, you can change all the play calls. You can change the coaches. You can fire this guy. It takes strong men to get it fixed. And I want to see how many strong men we have in that Raider locker room.
Rich, last one from me. In this situation, they need a bye week. The players do. And there's going to be some players that aren't going to get a bye week because they're going to be back here getting treatment. The injury bug was crazy yesterday. So what do you recommend from a distance here? Because the coaches are going to have to work because there's a new offensive coaching staff. A couple of coaches are gone here. How do you think the Raiders, as players, an organization on the football side, should react to a little time off here?
You know, I wouldn't go too far if it were me. You know, maybe a day or two away and you catch your breath and get away from it a little bit. But I wouldn't be booking a plane ticket to Cabo or anything like that. To me, it's like, hey, we've lost 5 straight and people are getting fired right underneath us. You know, we're losing good people. And, you know, it's not going to stop. They'll continue to make more changes. And so I don't like people getting fired on my watch. If I'm a quarterback, it happens on my watch. I feel bad. I take ownership in that. I hope some of these players do that. I think they have to come back in and work harder. I mean, you know, the best way to get things changed is to work harder. And I just think that has to happen. And I'm curious to see who's going to do it.
Thank you, Rich. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, my friend.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
The great Rich Gannon. Happy you could hear that today. That's fresh content. We get that on Monday when we do it. I usually play it Friday because it needs to be heard. And we're hearing from our MVP here, the last MVP of the Raiders. We want to hear what he has to say, and he has great analysis of what's going to happen. And I asked that question to Rich at the end strategically. Rich Gannon ain't going to Cabo. Rich Gannon would have been the first one in the building and the last one to leave. But I do believe that there are coaches, not so much coaches now because of the changes that were made, but the players need to get out of here. You got to get out of here during the bye week. And if you're going to stay here, when all the guys were getting hurt yesterday during the game, I said to my wife and my son, I said, wow, these guys aren't going to be able to go away. They're going to have to get treatment here. You've got like broken ankles all over the place. You know, you're not going to go away and get away if you got to have treatment on your ankle. I was worried about that yesterday. I thought a lot of guys got hurt playing on that field. And I don't know if it was a turf problem or not. There were plenty of players on the other team that didn't have it. But there's concern there. It's not known for being a great turf. And what happened to the Raiders players is ankles were collapsing throughout that game in the cart. So I talked to Tom Telesco today. I walked into an area where I saw Tom. He came up to me. He goes, "How you doing, man? How you hanging in there?" I'm going, "I'm fine, Tom. This is what I do. My job does not change. I want to win." And then he pulled me aside and we talked for a good 5 minutes about what's going on in the roster. And we mostly talked about the injuries. I said, "How many guys got hurt yesterday? How many did you play?" And Antonio Pierce said it in the press conference. We'll get to that sound coming up next. You got 8 offensive linemen. These are coaches and guys who have been in the league a long time. They've never seen that before. They've never seen that many guys lined up outside the x-ray room for the same injury. Ankle injuries, not able to come back. A lot of guys got hurt this year. God, you can't predict that. How do you predict that? How many guys are going to be gone for the year? And if we had a game this week against Miami this week, I think that the Raiders would be signing guys on practice squads and bringing them up. We wouldn't have enough to go. Jackson Powers Johnson got a really nice grade in the game. I'm happy he played well. I believe, and I like Andre James, I've told you that, but I think Jackson Powers Johnson will be the center at some point for the future for a long time here. He really played well and looked much more comfortable at center than he did at guard. That's the way I saw it when I watched the game and looked at some of the highlights there. We will wrap it up coming up here in a few moments. Like to hear from you one more time. 702-365-9200. Brought to you by Virgin Hotels Las Vegas. You know, starting the next couple of weeks with F1 close to being here. That's a good place if you're going to F1 and you're going to be a part of it around the week to call it your home base. Cliff Atkinson has that thing set up beautifully next to the paddock for F1. So if you're looking for a spot to go get your beverage on, get a dinner before the race, afterwards, meet up with friends, meet at Virgin Hotels, Las Vegas. My go-to spot, especially for F1 right around the corner.
Yeah, we got to reset. I mean, it goes for all of us. I mean, it's, you know, it's a group effort. It's a team effort. We all got to find a way to do better. We're going to pinpoint from this game and look at a lot of things from coaches to play calling to players to execution to situations that we all can do a much better job and put ourselves in position to, you know, get into the fourth quarter and actually have a chance to win and not be always playing catch up.
Okay. That's him from last night, Antonio Pierce. We have some sound from him today. He had his press conference. It was a Zoom call. It was early because they made the decisions last night to not retain 3 coaches. So let's get to that. This is Antonio Pierce from earlier today. Just a couple of sound bites on the decisions that were made.
Yeah, just performance results and production. Just wasn't heading the direction I wanted it to go. And I'll use the next, 24 to 48 hours to sit down with the staff and figure out who's going to call the offense going forward.
That was the beginning. A lot of people were waiting for what he was going to say there. There was no decision yet. There's no formal announcement on the offensive coordinator going forward. But the decision to do it, who made the decision? Was this all the head coach?
100% my decision.
100% his decision. It's a good drop we could use down the road because it is his decision. And I knew that. When that decision was made and I saw the alert from Tom Pelissero, I knew that was Coach Pierce. Now, did he talk to Mark Davis? Of course. Did he talk to Tom Telesco? Yeah. But he's the head coach, and he agreed on these hirings, and he made the decision. Here's some of the changes he's looking forward to.
Yeah, I just want to see his man, like I always talked about, us looking right, sounding right, matching the philosophy and idea of what I preach, which is, physicality, ability to run the ball, taking shots down the field, protecting the football first and foremost, disciplined up front. I think what we're going to do going forward, we got to do what we have. Obviously, we're dealing with injuries. A lot of new players are in and out of the lineup. We got to do what's best and gives us the best opportunity to win, whatever that may be. If it's throwing the ball 60 times, fine. If it's running it 60 times, fine. But we got to find a balance and an identity on offense going forward.
They have no identity on offense. We all know that. That's why there was a coaching change. They tried. What they did at all costs was they tried to run the football too much. That's all they did. Do we all agree with what I just said? Bobby's like looking at me like I'm Captain Obvious. Yeah, right? That's what they tried to run it, and they couldn't run it, and they stopped getting the ball to the guys who could run short routes, intermediate routes, pitch and catch, real quick throws, and they wanted to prove that they were cool and they could run it, and they couldn't. That's it. That's the way I see it. Make that into a T-shirt. They wanted to run it when they shouldn't have run it. Not to say that they can't run it at all, but they needed to get out of the run much quicker in these games. Coach Pierce talking about the turnovers, which really is the big problem around the league.
When I look at the last 9 weeks, I just look, you know, at a bunch of things. I'm going to start first and foremost with the turnovers. I don't care what team you are, who you have at quarterback, who's your head coach, who's your OC. You're not going to win games when you turn the ball over at the rate we've been turning over pretty much three times a game, especially 13 in the last five. I think we've had enough opportunities to punch the ball in and to give our team an opportunity to win games, and we haven't done that. And that's really a compilation of everything. When I go from play caller to the play of our players, to execution, to details, to the confidence that we're playing with, a lot of those things factor into it. Some of it is shocking. I mean, because I think when we left training camp, we felt really good about this group and our team. I mean, obviously, we did get hit with injuries, but that's no excuse because every team in the league is dealing with that as well. But I think offensively, it just wasn't going the way I wanted to go, and it didn't look the way I wanted to look.
I thought that's a very important soundbite because this has been brewing for a couple of weeks. He could have fired Luke Getsy 2-3 weeks ago. He kept, you know, being loyal to him, his coaching staff. It's one of his coaches, to give him a chance to turn it around. So could the firing happened earlier? I think it should have happened after Kansas City. I think we saw enough after Kansas City, but he gave him one more week in Cincinnati, and it didn't work out, so the decision comes before the bye week, which is really important. He talked about the offense stalling as the game goes on. They've been pretty good scripting those first few plays and scoring on the opening drive.
Well, listen, I mean, the last five games, we come out the gate like bulls, right? We're coming out scoring, opening possession, going down the field, second possession pretty good, and then, you know, we kind of like hit a brick wall. And as you watch it, you know, the three and outs or turnovers will show up in those last five games, and it just became apparent that obviously we weren't doing enough as a staff and as a team to overcome, you know, our mistakes and downfalls. And obviously, again, I'm going to go back to it. We had plenty of opportunities, you know, either in the red zone or either turnover, a big play on special teams to create those opportunities for our team to win.
I truly believe this is a good press conference. It gives you everything. I mean, he's taking accountability. He's telling you he's disappointed. He had to make a change. It's hard. Hard for him to do this. He's a head coach. He wants to be the coach for a long time, and he's fighting to try to keep this team together. And I thought he made that point earlier today when EA and I watched it live and we were looking at it. You could see his body language. He's hurt by this, man. People lost their jobs today. That is really difficult when you're trying to keep a team together. He believes he's the right man for the job going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously confident in my ability to lead and do what I'm asked to do as a head coach. I just had that conversation, oddly enough, that you asked me with our staff, and asked them, what's their confidence level? Where are we at? And because that's going to be reflective onto the players then reflect that onto the field and their play style. We got to get that back. And it's hard to be confident when you're losing, right? I can sit there and have a smile and be gritty and all that stuff. But, you know, human nature does take an element of it. There's a piece of human element of there as far as your emotions that go into it. But I'm confident in my ability to lead this team, to get them going. I think we fight. I think our effort is there. Our execution is poor at times. The opportunities that we have, we let them slip through our hands. And we got to stop doing it. And I don't use the excuse of playing with a young roster. I actually look at that as an advantage for us, right? Because I got a guy that I can mold. He's a sponge, and I can feed him what I want him to be and what him to do and what I want him to look like. And that's why I told our staff, man, just use this time with the players that we got in and out of the lineup to just keep molding. Now, yeah, there's a continuity there, the chemistry there. It's hard when you in and out of the lineup. Hell, we played 8-0 linemen yesterday. I don't think I've ever seen that before, at least been a part of it. But at the end of the day, man, I'm not going to – the question of our team with our effort and our fight, that's going to go through. They love one another. They're fighting. They're not going to let people poke holes in armor right now as we're going through this tough stretch. But like I told them, we got this bye week to regroup. We'll do that over the next 42 to 72 hours, and we get ready to come back and get ready for Miami.
Well, very detailed out, and that's where we stand here. So kind of a mini State of the Union. We get a pause here for the bye week. I'm going to get out of here for a few days. I'll be back on Monday. We do this every year during the bye week. The bye week came at a bizarre time this year after Halloween, before Thanksgiving. The Raiders are banged up. They're playing poorly. They're playing their worst football as a team that I've seen in years. Their worst football. And they got to play better football, and they made some changes. I'll let some coaches go to try to get a kickstart for them. We'll see. We'll see how the kickstart works here. But there's good players in that locker room, great people in the organization, all fighting to win. And this is tough sledding. This is a very difficult time for everyone, including the fans. And all I am is a portal for the fans. I'm a season ticket holder, member of the Black Hole, and I take pride in what I do. And it's been hard for the fans. Not for me. I do the job I do every day. But for the fans that have been going through this, licking their wounds, and wanting to win every week, I understand what you're going through. It's hard. And that's why changes are made, and changes are made. The changes aren't going to be made on your timeline. They're going to be made when the owner and the coach wants to make changes, and it just happened to fall last night coming out of Cincinnati. Thanks to Bobby for putting the show together. Q is up next. We have other programming coming in here the rest of the week. I'm going to check out. I'll do a little bit on social media, but I'll be back here over the weekend and into next week. And then I'm going to Miami. Going to go right back to Florida with the team and go out there for a couple days and get a front row view of how the team reacts off the bye week in Miami. Have a great rest of the week, everybody. Appreciate you listening. All the shows are up at lbsportsnetwork.com. I'm live from Wynn on the Strip from 4 to 7 on Mad Dog Sports Radio. That's Sirius XM Channel 82.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.